everyone. This is the Women in Action Sports Network Conversation Space. I am Alba Pardo, and today we're speaking with Kim Woozy. Kim Woozy is an entrepreneur, community leader, and an advocate in the skateboarding community. She has spent the last 15 years creating and contributing to brands, organizations, and events that inspire, connect, and empower girls and women, including Mafia TV. Currently, she's the Director of Marketing and Partnerships at Skate Like a Girl, a 501c3 community-led organization whose mission is to create an inclusive community by promoting confidence, leadership, and social justice through skateboarding. Today with Kim, we talk about the places she's gone, about her professional journey and her passion for driving change in the female skateboarding community. From creating one to representing it, promoting it, creating opportunity, and elevating it. Kim's insight on how community-based models make such a big difference, as well as her vision of change, empowerment, creating and taking opportunities and growth, is not only inspiring and educating, but it's also refreshing and relatable. It's always nerve-wracking and such a pleasure to speak to Kim because she has so much to tell and such good stories to share. I cannot wait for you to meet her and listen to our conversation. So without further ado, please welcome Kim Woozy. Okay, well, thank you very much, Kim, for joining us today. I'm really excited to have you on board. And as I said, I am always a bit nervous to talk to you because you have so much going on. It's a pleasure, an honor, and it's exciting to talk to you, to hear what's happening on your site, and to inspire all of us. So thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. I'm always excited to talk to you as well. And don't be nervous, because yeah, I could talk forever about anything. So I'm always happy to share my experiences as best as possible to hopefully inspire and or educate our community. So yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. So let's begin with you. The last time I talked to you, you probably were still at Mafia, and that was in full swing, but that was a few years ago. Since then, you know, you've been giving TED Talks, you've been in commenting in Dutor, you've been endorsing women all over the world. You've started the San Francisco Skate Like a Girl chapter. So tell us what's going on. What have you been up to, and what are the headlights of?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think when we first met, I was in Biarritz. It's been a while, more than a few years ago. But at the time, I was running Mafia.tv, which was my company and a website. And actually now Mafia as a platform is sort of more of an archive. Like, it's on the shelf. The website's still there live, but I'm seeing it as more of an archive. It's like a library. It's like a glimpse into like 2011 to 2017, 2018 in terms of like stories and videos around girls action sports. So that's basically on the shelf now. And the reason why is, and I would say a number of things. One is just the way people consume or watch content has shifted, you know, obviously a lot continuously every day. Platforms are changing. And it was sort of a challenge, yeah, to figure out how to sustain it as a business. So we're mainly looking to like work with brands who wanted to advertise or, you know, pay for like branded content. And it was always a kind of uphill battle. So I think finally I got to the point where I was like, okay, this isn't really working quite the way that I had hoped. So let me try to pivot and figure out what else, you know, how can I still fulfill on the mission that I originally had, which was to like inspire women to participate in action sports. But just maybe it's going to look different than a media platform. Right. So basically around that time, I moved back to San Francisco Bay Area, which is where I'm from originally. And started actually connecting with, Skate Like a Girl, which is a nonprofit that started in Seattle, Washington, and they had a chapter in the Bay Area. It was very grassroots at the time. So it was sort of just like people meeting up, you know, informal kind of unstructured meetups. And I started skating with them. And that was the first time I really felt like invited to skate, even though I worked in the skateboarding industry for like 10 years.
Well, let me stop you there. Yeah. So yeah. Invited how? Describe that to us.
So Skate Like a Girl creates a very inclusive environment, right? So what happens is that no matter who you are, what your ability level, even if you don't even have a board, like when you show up to an event, you're welcomed and invited. Like literally someone said to me, hey, Kim, like, do you want to skate? What do you want to learn? Like, what are you working on today? Shout out to Kat, who was one of the volunteers at the time, who was like 17. And she was like so welcoming and loving and like taught me how to drop in and like all these things, right? But when I worked in the skateboarding industry, like there wasn't really an environment for learning. It was either like you're a pro skater or you'd been skating for years and that's why you were in, you know, a marketing position. Or like all the people around me that I knew that were girls that skated were pros. So like obvious, I could not relate to that. Plus I was also shooting photos. So I was always just like, I'll just keep, you know, to my job, which is to like create content. And oftentimes we're on trips to film or at events like X Games or something. So obviously I wasn't going to like learn to skate on the course at X Games. Like you can't even really do that. No. So it was like, wow, like this is very different. It was less intimidating. It was literally like, this is for you. Would you like to try? So even just like that message, that invitation creates a whole different picture. Plus seeing people that look like me, adult beginners, you know, people of all ages. It's a very beginner friendly, like all ability friendly environment, which is different than if you just like showed up at any skate park. Right. So that was really cool. And that was like very profound experience for me. So then just starting to skate with that crew. And then actually what happened was that chapter was very volunteer grassroots run, but Seattle and Portland are other chapters, Seattle being our biggest like mothership, like home base chapter, was starting to formalize, and we had insurance and we had a board and we had all these things that are proper, you know, and the Bay Area chapter was sort of behind. And so no one was able to step up. So the Bay Area chapter went on hold for a year. So like no one skated, there weren't any official meetups because of insurance and liability. So after that, I was like, oh, that's a bummer. That was like the most fun I ever had skateboarding. All right. And so I ended up actually meeting my friend now, who at the time, I didn't know, she came to this event and just introduced herself to me, Ashley Masters. And she told me that her background was teaching skateboarding. Right. So, we just got to talking and we were like, hey, if we teamed up, we could actually like relaunch this chapter. So we decided to take it on under the mentorship of Kristen Ebeling, who's the ED of Skate Like a Girl, the executive director. And then we volunteered for a year, and 3 years later, you know, fast forward to today, we both work full time. We have a handful of staff. We have about 15 to 20 volunteers throughout the year. We're doing year round programming. It just has become this amazing, beautiful, you know, sustainable structure. And it's been really exciting to be a part of it. So just kind of like, I think my biggest lesson from that was just like, whatever I originally set out to do, like just because it didn't work one way doesn't mean that it won't work another way. And so just like not being attached to like, it has to look, because for a long time I was very attached. Like I have to make Mafia as a business work. If not, I'm a failure. And I was so like, holding on to it so tightly that it just became like hard to see any other alternative possibilities. And so Skate Like a Girl became a new pathway. Plus there was already a community of people doing it. So that's what attracted me to it. I was like, with Mafia, it was just me. And I had my co-founder, Johnny, and I worked with photographers and other contractors and stuff. But I think because it was so much like rooted in like, this is my vision and I have to make it work. It was hard for me to like see other possibilities, and B, I was burnt out because I was doing it all by myself. Whereas Skate Like a Girl, it was like a built-in community and it was like automatic, like teamwork. And that's very much the values of Skate Like a Girl. It's community-based. It's very much volunteer-based. Kristen, who's now the executive director, volunteered for years as a teenager. So it's a lot more sustainable because you have a group of people doing different roles and you're not doing everything yourself. So that was huge. And so, yeah, today, fast forward, me and Ashley co-directed the SF Bay Area chapter for the past 3 years. And then this past year, we've also reorganized and restructured and grown a lot during the pandemic. So my new title is Director of Marketing and Partnerships for the whole organization. So we have Seattle, Portland, the Bay Area, And then we're also doing a lot of digital content. So we have more of a global audience now. So it's been really fun and exciting.
I have so many questions out of it. so many interesting stuff. I don't even know where to begin with, but I guess the beginning is, in order for you to get involved with Skate Like a Girl, you had to let go of Mafia a little bit. And personally, that's something that I really struggle with, especially when you almost made it to the point you wanted it, but not quite. And that's a tough one because it takes your time away from everything else and your focus and your energy and your money. How did you do that? Or how did you come to terms to be like, okay, it's there, it's not dying, but it's dead as I knew it before?
I think a few things. Like, I mean, I was getting older and I was doing a lot more, like, I would say, reflecting on the past. And also I did some like personal kind of like development type work. So I started realizing, okay, like, I started Mafia because I had sort of like a chip on my shoulder from working in the core skateboarding industry. Cause I worked at Osiris. That was my first job, and helped launch a girls program, a girls team, right? Like Leticia Bufani was like one of the first like girls that was getting sponsored by Osiris. And I think when that ended, I was like, I'm going to prove to the industry that like girls are valuable and women can do it and we can make it happen. And I was always trying, like I built Mafia from a place of like defense and like trying to prove something. So it's very ego based, I realized. I was trying to like prove the guys that they were wrong. Like, look, women are valuable. Like women are marketable. Like women in skateboarding and these other sports is like, you should care. Right. So it was coming from this place of like trying to prove something. And so because it was more ego based, I think that there's a lot of gaps when you do anything from a position like that versus like Skate Like a Girl is very much like a community effort. And it's also like not about any one of us. Like it's so much only possible because there's so many people involved. There's so many aspects. It's not one person's brand, right? Even Kristen Ebeling, who's the ED, she's like the best in terms of like making sure everyone's involved and like everyone's, you know, voice matters. So I think just like understanding that I was young when I started Mafia and I was definitely very passionate and driven, but it was kind of coming from this place of like, you know, ego and defense. And then I think the other piece too, is that for so long, a lot of the companies that, not a lot of the companies, but a lot of like where myself and some colleagues, like other women in the industry were coming from, like trying to get a piece of this pie, right? So it's like the industry that's like dominated by men, male leaders, and trying to get them to like, trying to convince them that like women are valuable in this market, if you want to look at it from a business standpoint. And I think over time I started seeing, wait, like we don't need these gatekeepers to be convinced. We can just go do this on our own. If it's true, but we're actually saying like, hey, women want to participate and they want to shop and all these things, then let's just go do that instead of trying to convince the gatekeepers. And definitely, I think a few factors, like seeing Lisa start Meow Skateboards and seeing the success of Meow, which again, like I think initially shops didn't carry. They were just like, no, I don't, you know, that's not something we want to do. So she would just sell online, right? And then seeing the popularity and growth. And I was like, okay, if we remove the gatekeepers, like we could just create our own pie and create our own ecosystem. And to me, that's like what Skate Like a Girl was, because Mafia was like B2B. I was like talking to all these brands, trying to get them to pay us to advertise or pay us to shoot content. And it would always be such a struggle. They're like, we don't have budget, or we have our own guys to shoot. We don't need like female photographers or videographers. Like we don't need that. Right. So it was also from a business standpoint, it was like, I don't want to convince the customer to convince a customer that this product is valuable. Like if I have to do that, then clearly the business is not viable. Whereas Skate Like a Girl, it's like we open, you know, skate lessons, summer camp, free clinics, and like people just show up in the masses, and we're not having to convince them that they should pay, you know, the summer camp registration fee. They like get it and they just sign up. So like when I kind of saw a different pathway there, I was like, okay, that's what I want to do. Like, I don't want to waste my energy trying to explain or convince anymore. I want to just do the work. Right. So yeah, that was probably the main, you know, reason that helped me sort of pivot to this next thing. And I was just tired and bummed. And honestly, I was ready to, I thought about like just leaving the action sports industry. I was like, is this even going to work? At the time, like no one was really getting paid. Like Leticia was probably the only girl really being sponsored, like on a professional level. So I was like, maybe this just isn't going to happen. And maybe this will just be a nice hobby side thing that we all do, like passion project. So I had some thoughts about just like, should I just leave and go try to do something real? Cause I was getting older and I was like, I need to like actually make something of myself. So luckily I didn't, cause I had a few mentors, like people like Eileen Oliver, really like empowering me and cheering me on. And then just doing, again, like I said, some more reflection to understand like, okay, if we take on like growth mindset, it's just that I was like, oh, I'm a failure. I can't make a business work. Like I suck, but it was like, no, it's just, I haven't done it yet. So I tried to shift out of that. And there's a lot of parallels to that and like learning to skateboard or snowboard. Right. So.
Also, I think you were trying to maybe follow a path that was already there, a way that the men had used and it was working for them. And for the female, scene, that didn't work. It just didn't. It wasn't the same. And so you just had to go on and create your own way. And I think that's really, for me, the biggest takeaway of what you just explained. Also, it's interesting to see how working at a top level with the top athletes or the top skaters or the most well-known people wasn't quite working out. And it hasn't been until you've gone to the base of the sport and to actually the community and the culture of it that you've been fulfilled and you found this career path, but also again your passion. So yeah. I think that's really interesting. And do you think for minority sports, especially in the female scene, that's the way? Like you can't just go, you have to build the grassroots.
I think I think all aspects are important. I think the time that I was working, that I was doing Mafia and really focusing on like exposing and telling the stories of the top like athletes, plus working with Mimi on the event side, because like just, or that was right around the time where Street League and X Games started adding women's pro events in. So that was important because in order for the whole ecosystem to flourish, the pros need to have elevation. They need to have opportunities. They need to be getting paid because everything trickles down. Right. But then as that stuff started taking off, it was also like, okay, well, if someone is going to have a pro model board or a pro model shoe or whatever, with whatever brand, and if someone's going to like, you know, get on the podium at X Games or Street League or something, there needs to be fans and participants. Like someone out there needs to buy their shoe, buy their board, watch the contest. Like they need to care. Right. So I think once the stuff started elevating for the pro like women's side of things, then the next place to look was okay, participation. Cause at the end of the day, this is an industry and it's like, you know, fueled off a business. So it's like, if you don't have customers, like it doesn't matter if you care about elevating, you know, women. So with Skate Like a Girl, it's definitely about giving folks the chance to learn to skateboard and become part of the community if they want to. And that was a gap that was always there, you know, even for me, like I was saying, like, I didn't even really feel like skateboarding was for me, even though I worked behind the scenes, you know? So I think that all pieces of the ecosystem are important. And I also think like, it's important to look at what's missing, right? Because like, if you are looking to start something new, or you work for a brand that's looking to like step into this, you know, the women's side of the community, or just like expansive gender identities, like non, you know, cisgender men, look at what's missing, what's needed and wanted. Cause it's just, it makes more sense from a functional standpoint to have different things that fill these holes. So like at the time it was like Mimi was doing WSA, which was like focusing on making sure the events were dialed for the pro women. Lisa had a Meow, which is a board company. Eileen, my other good friend, started doing like agent type work because some of these skaters needed representation. They're starting to talk to big companies. Like you can't just like sign a contract with some ginormous corporation without having someone like
that knows what they're doing.
Yeah. And it's like legal documents and it's crazy. And so, and then I was doing media, but then as other platforms started covering women, like the mainstream kind of like dominant skate media, then I was like, okay, well, what else is needed? So I think it's important to look at what is not happening and to like focus some time and energy there instead of trying to like do like copy and paste, and also like giving up your own wants and needs. And actually, if you're truly going to like make something valuable for the community, you got to look at what's needed and wanted. So here's kind of like where I also was able to let go, is that I stopped posting on the Mafia Instagram, and like no one was like, oh my God, why aren't you guys posting? Like, A, the algorithm of Instagram was changing, and B, like it was an entertainment platform, but it wasn't like, oh my God, I can't, like you guys need to come back. Like, it's so important. So that's how I also knew. I was like, okay, well, clearly like the functionality of the business is not super important. They always say that about like tech startups too. It's like, whatever app you're trying to invent, does it actually need to exist? Right. Or is it just some cool idea? Yeah. Whereas with Skate Like a Girl, when we don't do camps and lessons and programs, like there's a real need. I saw that for myself. Like, we stopped doing meetups and I was like, I literally have no one to skate with, like, and nowhere to skate. So, yeah, I think that's important to look at for sure.
Absolutely. You brought up WSA and how you guys started as well. It was around the time that bigger events included women. It's funny because I'm part of this organization of this big sports festival, and we have a World Cup skateboarding cup in the event. And we really struggle to get women confirmed top athletes. And it's like, yeah, okay, this year is the Olympics, but also there's not many women. And, you know, you have organizations like WCS, like the World Cup Skateboarding, World Skate, all these people should be doing something identifying this woman. Is that a bit still what you're trying to do? And how do you get to this woman? How do you find these women that are skateboarders, that want to skateboard, that are good at it? And how do you then showcase them and bring them to these places and to the spotlight? Because, you know, we work differently. We don't naturally walk towards the light like maybe the men athletes do a bit more naturally. So A, where do we find these women? And B, how has been your role within putting the spotlight in all these girls?
For sure. Yeah. Well, I think when it comes to like contests and just any event, if it's run, if it's like an existing entity that's like run, you know, historically by men, in order to like really invite and include, you know, this new community that historically there has not been space for, I think the most effective way to like message is to bring in someone from the community. So like partnering with, you know, a women's skate media outlet, or partnering with like a women's run skate brand, or bringing in consultants. That's exactly what Mimi created WSA for. It was like a consulting agency to bring her in, who's someone who has the relationships and has the experience. And then, you know, there's a handful of us as well as like contractors or just like teammates to do the messaging to make it authentic, because I think they're all out there. Like, there's lots of girls that want to compete and skate. It's very clear. But if the messaging is inauthentic, then they're not going to want to waste their time to show up to an event that may or may not be prioritizing them, right? And also, like, let's look at the prize money. Like, is that something that's equitable? That's like a very clear factor. Like, girls know right away, like, okay, if there's an equal prize money, that you're already saying something about how you value me. And so if you're telling me that you don't value me, like, why would I show up and like travel and waste my time and put my body on the line, you know, to like compete, right? So I think it's bringing
equal
in,
pay for equal play.
Yes, like that's money talks. And also bringing in the right folks that are off, that already have the authentic like relationships is key. And I think a lot of brands struggle with this because they're wanting, they get the value now, they want to reach girls, whether it's an event or a product or whatever. But where they're missing is actually bringing in someone at the table, like in the decision-making room, that is someone who's in the community, who has ties, you know, who can speak on behalf of their experience, and then to just listen to them, you know? So I think it's always important to have like that leadership at the table. And if you can't bring someone in on your team, like hire a consultant, you know, or partner, like I said, with other leaders in the community, whether it's a media outlet or a brand or whatever. I think that's important. And I also think like women in general, like yeah, we're less drawn to competition. Like there are like the fierce competitors out there. But in general, like most women that start skateboarding, are not doing it to try to, you know, turn pro or become, you know, the get on the podium. They're doing it because it's fun. It's creative. It's exercise. It's like a way to feel free, you know? And so to message for someone to come to a contest, there really has to be like the right pieces in place. Cause I agree, like it's a different approach than, you know, maybe for young men. And I hate to like put a blanket statement on everything, but oftentimes I think for sometimes young men or boys that are driven by competition or more like ego fueled, like type of skateboarding. Whereas girls are very much like, oh, I'm just doing this for fun. Like, I don't even want you to look at me. Like, I don't want to be watched. So there's a lot of mental barriers, I would say, for contests.
Yeah. And also I have, it's a two-part question again, because you're part of the World Skate Comedy, or the, is it the assessment, like you consult them on the
I was asked to join the Gender Equality Commission under World Skate. So I've been just like in the past handful of months been contributing to that group, which is comprised of women from around the world, really some amazing people. So Alex White, who's my friend who brought me into the group, and then Renata in Brazil, Nate from Argentina, Veronica from Spain, who runs Dolores Magazine. Yeah. And then Tessa, who's actually doing work with Skate Pal in Lebanon right now. Yeah. Or it's not Skate Pal, but just like in the Middle East. Yeah.
So A, what's your main focus with that? And, you know, what's the value, of course, we know of comedies like that in organizations such as WorldSkate? And also to your personal experience, you've gone from these protests with Mafia, this fight back, to being very political, like a skateboard activist for female and equality and gender equality. So do you remember something that made you start there? Like, was there any ignition moment that was like, this is not right, I need to do something to change it? And of course, in time, you've shifted the way you do it. But was there something there, or is just the feeling that you had?
I think it was kind of ingrained in me from the beginning, because I grew up playing team sports, like traditional sports. So basketball, soccer, like in America, we had Title IX, which is like a law that basically, you know, created equal opportunities for like girls and women, just all genders to play. So like every school had to have, like my elementary school had a girls basketball team and a boys basketball team. And that was like a law, right? So from just having opportunities from the beginning that were more or less equal, like coming from soccer and basketball in traditional sports, and then like kind of stepping more into action sports culture later in college and stuff like that, seeing the difference was what made me feel like there's work to be done. So like an example that I always reference is like when I first started working in Osiris, I was like just literally an intern, and like they were doing a photo shoot and they put like an ad out for models to like model the new line of clothes and shoes, right? But in the meanwhile, they were flowing like shoes and product to like girl skaters. So I'm like, in my head, I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, why are you doing that? On the men, you're not like sponsoring pro dude skaters and then hiring male models. Like, that would be wild if the men did that. So they just couldn't understand it. They just can only see it from their point of view. And then being men, they're like, we want a pretty girl. And I'm like, okay, I get it. But like, you don't apply that same viewpoint to the men. You're like, this guy rips, who cares what he looks like? So we're going to put him in the ad. And he's literally like, we'll take photos when we need photos of the shirts or shoes or whatever. So like, that was like literally like my first project. And I was like, this is weird. Like the models were great. They're all like, some of us were like, it was like friends of people at the company. Like amazing, no shade to model. Like modeling is super hard. Yeah. So if anyone ever thinks that's like an easy job, no, like I dare you to try it. It's like super exhausting. But it just didn't make sense. I'm like, well, I grew up looking up to athletes like WNBA, US Women's National Soccer Team, World Cup, all the things. It was like posters on my wall, even snowboarding. I had like posters of Kara Beth Burnside on my wall. You know, she was a snowboarder and a skateboarder first, but I was like, I don't hang a picture of a model on my wall. Like, I want to be like the girl that's like flying through the air. Right. So immediately I was like, okay, clearly there's gaps, and it just didn't make sense to me. And I can't, like, as a kid who was just like a dorky, like loved sports, like nerd, like I can't try to aspire to look like a model. I could probably get tons of surgery and like makeup and all that stuff, but like, that seems like a lot of work. But I could definitely practice snowboarding and skateboarding and get better and try to be like these pros. And so it's way more, it's like almost more attainable to like develop your skills. We can't change how we look. Right. So again, same thing. It was just like, when I, as soon as I stepped into the industry, I started understanding, all right, this is like kind of weird and different. And like, also I think skateboarding and snowboarding was at the time very dominated or very influenced by the surf industry, because the surf industry was the biggest in terms of lifestyle. You had like Roxy and Billabong and these big brands that were selling a lifestyle, right? And then the surf industry also is very much like, you know, I talk about this in my now kind of older TED Talk 2012, but just the objectification of women, and, you know, because they're selling bikinis and all that stuff. So it was just very much like this, I don't know if I want to say toxic, because I try to like just understand where these guys were coming from. They can only come from where they come from. Just like, I don't know what it's like to be a male skater who grew up skating in the 90s. Like, I, that wasn't me. So I can't even speak on that experience. But in the same way, like, if you are not, if you can't, if you don't have the lived experience of a certain identity, I would say like, don't try to guess what they want or need. Just like, bring in someone who has that lived experience, because they'll do a better, more accurate job of the messaging and the marketing. So like, as soon as they brought me in, and again, I was just an intern, I was like, hey, like, let's sponsor this girl. Let's bring Alicia for the photo shoot. Let's bring Karen, like whoever, right? The girls I was working with, the athletes, I was like, they can, like, if they want to, which a lot of them were down, I was like, let's just shoot photos. Like, we'll get some skate shots, and they can like wear, model the shoes. Like, that's, they're down. Like, let's just use them. So we started shifting. And then I think that's kind of like, you know, the direction that everyone started going in. But there's still brands that, you know, go that like model route. Now it's like, okay, you need to be an athlete and a model and all the things. But I still think that there's a gap when it comes to like, it's not about what the person looks like. It's about what they represent and who they are in the community. Because ultimately, that's going to sell way more product if that's what you're focused on, than what you think people want to see. Like Leo Baker, great example, right? Like, Leo was told their whole life, like, oh, you need to be like long blonde, pretty hair, whatever. And Leo was like, that's not me. And like, Leo was like, screw it, I'm just gonna shave my head and like be unapologetically me. And as a result, Leo's a lot of people's favorite skateboarder. So it's just a perfect example of like, it's more important like who you are, what you stand for, than what you look like. And even, I would even argue, than what you do on your board. Cause like, that's, nowadays it's not enough. You need to like stand for something and be a good human. If you're like an asshole and a super good ripper, like,
doesn't matter.
At the end of the day, like, people are, that's going to translate. People are not going to want to like buy your board or support you, you know? So,
well, thank goodness. Cause otherwise we'd be just going down even further. So yeah, I mean, it's funny to see how something so obvious to you, even, you know, you just got into the company as an intern, it was so mind blowing to them. And it's great. It's great to have that representation. And it also, I think it's a very powerful message in the terms of like, because it's not happening now doesn't mean it can't happen. Because change is not there doesn't mean it can change.
So, and just because someone's not showing up doesn't mean that they don't want to show up. It just means that there hasn't been an effective invitation or communication to them, you know?
And you don't know what you don't know, right? So sometimes a fresh pair of eyes can show you a lot. So talk to me again to this group of this committee in the World Skate, and maybe that can bring us a bit to the Olympics and see what you think about it, how it's going with skateboarding. What do you think about skateboarding in the Olympics?
Yeah, well, definitely what's interesting is that just like everything else in skateboarding that's DIY, I would say like even this group, like there's been a lot of barriers and challenges and obstacles, and even like how World Skate got formed, it was a lot of complex like political hoops to jump through, like who is going to have the power and the control. I do think that the Olympics as an entity, and just like the IOC and then all the governing bodies that work under the IOC, it's like kind of a double-edged sword. On one hand, it's like a huge platform, right? That everyone knows, like my grandma knows what the Olympics is, right? So yeah. Like my grandma does not know what like X Games or Street League is, but like she knows what the Olympics is. So it's a huge platform, and it does like bring together folks from all over the world, and it creates opportunities in places especially that never would have had opportunities. So I think that's the positive. And then there's of course the negatives and the kind of the criticisms is that it is a very old institute that, you know, is embedded in like the patriarchy, right? Like, I don't know the exact details, but I'm pretty sure it was started by a bunch of men, I don't know, in Europe or somewhere, right?
So, well, in Greece, they used to compete naked with gymnastics.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I totally forgot. Yeah, Greece. So yeah, it was very, it's so old. So like they're very behind. Like it's not started by a bunch of 20-year-olds, right? So there's a lot of gaps. And so there's plenty of space for criticism. But with anything big and has a massive reach, you're going to have like a magnifying glass on you. You're going to be held to account as you should because of the power and the reach that you have. And I think there's always opportunity to evolve. So I think for me personally, like even with working with a gender equality commission, there's been like Alex is sort of like basically brought me on because it just wasn't the commission was trying to figure out like, what's our role? How do we even work, you know, within this structure? It's all never been done before. Like World Skate even being this governing, we've never had a world governing body for skateboarding. It's always just been events that are like privately run by some brand or some company, or ESPN had X Games, right? Or has X Games. So even just working together on that level, there's going to be a lot of breakdowns along the way. And so I think it's normal. It's part of the process. I think anything that is going to be really impactful takes a lot of those growing pains and issues, and like people have lots of opinions about it, and that's fine, and they should, right? But I think the thing is with skateboarding as a community is that we are resilient. People are coming from a DIY mentality. So whatever's not working, like it'll grow and evolve. And the community will like make sure that it gets like evened out, right? So I think with the Olympics as a whole, I always try to look at the positive things, because especially for women, like as much as people want to deny or criticize the Olympics as a institute, as they should and they can, just like we criticize anything, anyone or anything that has a lot of power and influence. As much as people have their opinions, like I saw straight up the shift in the support for women like firsthand. So it was like, as soon as the IOC announced that they were adding skateboarding in, everyone's attitude in the industry started changing. Cause it was before it was like, no, we don't care about girls. Like they don't skate. Mm-hmm. We don't think they're ever really going to skate. They suck, like whatever, all these things. And then as soon as it was like, okay, now it's going to the Olympics and there has to be women, like everyone's attitude shifted suddenly. And it was like, yeah, let's like sponsor girls now. And it was like, It started even with Street League as this premier like contest, you know, circuit for skateboarding that never had women. And it was just like, yeah, we're just going to do men. Like it was always an afterthought. And one year, because Yulene was working at Street League at the time, she brought us in. It was like myself, Lisa, and Mimi. Like that was like even before we had like Mimi formed WSA. It was just, we were kind of like loosely working together as friends. And we sat down and pitched to them like a women's division in Street League. And they were like, this is cool. Like, nice. Like, cool. They were like,
nice.
Open. Yeah. They were like, all right. They just like shoulder shrug. They weren't like mean about it, but they're just like, all right, I don't know. Like, we'll get back to you. Like radio silence. So fast forward like a year, 2 years, I forget exactly the timeline. IOC announces, okay, it's happening. And then they called us to come back in and they're like, we want women. And they presented to us then a presentation, and it was like women. And we're like, they were like, this isn't just because the Olympics. And we're like, no, it's just because the Olympics. That's fine. Like, if you don't want to credit the Olympics, fine, whatever. But so then, of course, when women were at Street League for the first time, that changed the exposure and the eyeballs, and just people started, it was a much bigger platform. And then, of course, everything followed suit. So I think there's that piece that you can, it's undoubtedly, it's not the only thing, but from the pro side of things, from competitive, like elite professional skateboarding, that was a game changer for the women. And then I also think that the beauty that I've seen is like so many places where the, like, even if you were the best skater in your country, it just wouldn't have mattered. Like there's no way you could have made a career out of it. So yeah. Like one of my favorite examples is like Margie Lynn Didal from the Philippines. Like she was the first Filipino skater to skate at Street League. She was supported through, like, I'm pretty sure local government, just the state, right? Because of the Olympics. She got sponsors. Like she like has all sorts of access to, you know, and she'd been skateboarding for a long time already, but no one knew who she was outside of the Philippines. And now she's like, to me, she's like about to be, or in my head, she already is like a global superstar. And she's about to be, because she's going to be on TV at the Olympics. And like, I never even met a skateboarder from the Philippines before. And she's just awesome. So like people like her, she never did it. She didn't start skateboarding because she wanted to go to the Olympics. She was just like a kid who skateboarded in the Philippines, and she's always having a blast, and she really embodies like the culture, and she's just having so much fun. And like you, that comes across when you see her skate, even on TV at the, these qualifying events. So to me, that there's many more examples of that. Right. And that's what I love.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's, of course, there's always two sides of the same story. But one of the biggest topics about action sports, like skateboarding in the Olympics, has been this blackout period, you know. Culturally, of course, our sports, you know, these athletes, they've been supported by these sponsors all their lives. And then the spotlight is on them and they have to drop it. And now you're in sponsorships and partnerships. How do you see that? How do you understand and how do you digest that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think that at the end of the day, like, you don't have to skate in the Olympics, you know, like you, there's, in terms of action sports, there's so many other things you can do. Mm-hmm. I would say that it's not for everyone, like competing on that level and training and all that, like just creating your relationship to your board sport that way is not for everyone. And no one's saying you have to do that. You can make a career for yourself doing a lot of other stuff. And a lot of people choose that. So I would say if you're choosing to like compete on that level and going to the Olympics, like, unfortunately there's just rules and structures. Right. And I would say that if you don't like those rules and structures, then create your own event, which is what Skate Like a Girl does. We have Wheels of Fortune, right? And we literally do whatever we want. And, you know, we create the experience to be very much what we would want at an event. So I would say with the, yeah, with like the sponsorships and blackout and all that stuff with the Olympics, like, you know, there's a lot of rules around even like what you can put on your board and like what qualifies as gear, what logos, like all that stuff. It's like, there's a lot of complexities there. I would say just, I get it, because I've run events and like, there's a lot of time and energy that goes into an event. And with especially an event like the Olympics, just like X Games and a lot of these other major, the NBA, it's a TV show at the end of the day. Like that's how they make money, is through advertisements, because people watch, they sell ads. Like they can't, they're not like making money through, there's, that's their revenue, that's the business model, right? So the same way that at Wheels of Fortune, if we have a title sponsor who paid us to help us cover the insurance, staff time, all these things, we're not going to then put their competitor, we're not going to ask like another competitive sponsor and then have both brands, you know, there. And I think with us, we're a nonprofit. So there's more flexibility. And a lot of the brands, luckily, like a lot of our key sponsors are definitely just the ones that we ended up working with want us to like, just do what we do. But I get it from a marketing side, right? Like the whole point of like trying to get eyeballs on what you're doing, right, is to do it in a way that's like unique, right? So if you're going to invest marketing dollars from a brand standpoint to an event or to a rider, like it's like there's rules around that to make it more efficient. Like I think a good example is like I see a lot of like grassroots events that literally have like we get like donations for raffle prizes, right? And you see the flyer and there's like 40 logos on the flyer. I don't look at any, I'm just like, oh my God, that's like stressful. Like, it's just like, it doesn't, I don't even want to read the flyer. Cause like there's so much stuff on it and it's just like, I can't even process
who's in there,
who's behind it. Yeah. So like, that's a good, that's kind of like an example of what the Olympics does when it comes to blackout, right? Cause like whoever their key sponsors are have paid a lot of money to make it happen. So it's the whole, like, you can't have 50 logos on one thing. No one even looks at any of the logos, but if there's one or two, you're like, oh, that's the company that's behind this event. Like, the messaging is clear. So.
Absolutely. Well, I like your point of view that it's a very positive attitude towards it. It's like, it's not for everyone. If you're going to take part of it,
you don't,
the rules, and
you don't have to, you don't have to watch. Like, you don't even have to watch. Like, you can be like, nope, I don't like it. Okay, great. So just like, keep your TV off. A lot of people don't even have TV anymore in terms of cable, you know?
When it comes to the sport as a show, and also to enjoy it as a spectator, I feel like more and more women's disciplines are even more enjoyable just because they're more relatable to the general public. The men's, like, the level is crazy, you know? And so the women's, I mean, yeah, of course the level is super high and the field is amazing, but I feel like it's more relatable and more enjoyable, and the competition is always more exciting and close, and it's not as good. How do you see that? How do you see the evolution of that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, like, that's a common theme you hear with people watching, like, you know, women's sports, is that of course there's like the super elite, you know, sports or athletes where you're like, I could never do what they're doing. And that's just like entertainment. It's like a spectacle. That's like big air at X Games. Most people are like, I will never do that, but it's like crazy to watch. Right. But then there's like things that are more relatable. And I think at the end of the day, like, there is an audience who wants to be able to watch something, watch someone do something on TV and then be like, oh yeah, I could go try that, you know? And I think that, like, where a lot of action sports has been is about progression, extreme, like, just like, how far can we push this? And it becomes less relatable. Like, I heard this about longboarding actually through, like, I think Valeria or some of, you know, other friends in that industry, is that for a while, longboarding was seeing explosive participation. Like, everyone was going to buy a cruiser board, a longboard, because it's like, what you know about longboarding is like, oh yeah, like, college campuses, like, I see kids skating around, or like a kid, or like whatever, right? You're not doing a ton of tricks. You literally just have seen people use it for transportation. So in your mind, it's like, I could do that. And then a lot of the media that started coming out on YouTube and Instagram and all the viral stuff was like crazy, like, extreme, like, downhill bombs, like full body suit, like, people doing insane stuff that visually is exciting to watch, but like not relatable. And I think that actually impacts the participation. Cause if that is the dominant visual that you think of in your head, you're not like, I want to try that. You're like, that's cool to watch, but not for me. So I think with like a lot of these contests now, the level of skating is both like on the men's side, you know, is like spectacle, like crazy. But then on the women's side, for me, it's still a spectacle because I can't do anything they're doing. But for men watching the women, like, maybe it is more relatable. Maybe it's like, oh, like, I could potentially go try that trick or like be inspired to do that. So I think, again, there's value in like, if you're storytelling, like, how relatable are your characters, you know, just like in TV shows or movies, is this person actually someone that the audience can relate to or not? So, and I think the level has progressed a ton in terms of women in contests, like the consistency, just even the bag of tricks that a lot of the girls have, like, it's leveled up so fast and so much due to the fact of the structure, because literally 10 years ago, there was one contest a year. So like, how do you expect the progression level to increase if there's only one contest a year, which for a super long time, it was like X Games, whereas the men have contests like every month, right? So I do think that it's super exciting to watch. I think there's some parallels to other women's sports as well, like the WNBA. I've been watching this past year and like my mind is blown at how entertaining the games are and the skill. And that, I don't think that was the case 10 years ago, you know? So
no, there's a lot of sports exploding right now, like mountain bike and like, free riding. It's like, it's a huge example. There's very few women at the top level. And one of the reasons was because there wasn't any events for them, or they weren't even considered, and now they're starting. So that's like, all right, that's good. And at the end of the day, also, if you can't see it, you don't even know if you can do it.
Exactly.
The representation is super important as well. And that brings me back to Skate Like a Girl. I would like to wrap it up there and tell me your biggest lesson learned from your experience so far at Skate Like a Girl.
Oh, so many lessons. Biggest lesson. I think for me personally, in terms of my career, just the value of like teamwork. Cause I like didn't have that when I was running Mafia. Like I look back and realize how like individualistic my mentality was when I was doing running Mafia. And apologies to everyone that I had, you know, worked with, even Johnny, my co-founder. I was like, wow, like I was probably like kind of a pain because it was all about, this is what I think is going to work. We got to do this. And it wasn't like, what does everyone think will work? Right. And I think I was just young and like, again, coming from that like chip on my shoulder place, which is a very different mentality than I'm here to serve the community. Let me listen to what the community thinks is needed and is saying is wanted and needed. That's a very different mentality. So I think with Skate Like a Girl, just the power of teamwork and community building has been huge because we've been able to achieve all the things that we have been able to do because of that mentality. It's not about me, Kim, or Kristen, or any of our directors. It's about the community. And at the end of the day, like coming from that place, we've been able to do so much, like so quickly. Like I'm always so proud and impressed by how our team runs. And even in this past year, we've expanded versus like shrank, you know? So I think that's a huge lesson for anyone looking to create, whether it's your own project or brand or event, is just, it's so much power in teamwork. Like if someone's already doing what you're doing, see if you can team up with them, right? It's so, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. And it's like way more fun. And then you can take a vacation. It's like, hey, literally like I can go away and like hang out with my family and my dog or whatever. And this will still run. Whereas it's if you're doing happening. Your own thing, like you don't, and if it's only you, you can literally never take a vacation. So no. Sustainability is super important.
Do you think, obviously, these change your vision on that pie we were talking about at the beginning, you know, that there was this pie for women and we had to share and get a piece of it. Is there a pie anymore or is it like a massive cake right now that you can, it just gets bigger and bigger the more people it gets involved?
I think a lot of people, including Skate Like a Girl, are understanding the concept of like you can bake your own pie. And then now there's like, we're getting like more ovens and more ingredients. So it's like, you can just create, there's an abundance of opportunity. You just have to be willing to put in the work. Right. So I think, yes, like there's not really the scarcity mentality is shifted. It's gone because now we have a better understanding of like, there's so many people that can skateboard. It's so accessible. Like literally the barrier to entry is so low. So you don't have to fight someone else. Even us, like there's lots of other nonprofits and or for-profit businesses that teach skateboarding or do meetups. And like, there's no need to come from a place of scarcity where it's like, oh, they got the sponsorship, so that means like we lose out. It's like, no, there's other opportunities. There's always more people that could like learn to skate, that want to learn to skate. And there's no need to come from like a defensive place. And I think also for the pro skaters too, there's a lot more opportunities now. I mean, just look at how the landscape has changed. It's not even just within endemic like action sports. Like Leo Baker just did an ad with Mercedes-Benz with Athlete Ally, which is an amazing advocacy group, nonprofit, advocating for like LGBTQ community. And I'm like, that's amazing. Like 5 years ago, Leo was just like trying to get a shoe sponsor, you know, or however many years ago. So I think like, if you really come from that place of like sky's the limit, then whoever you want to work with, it's always a possibility, you know? Even like you look at like training and health and wellness now, which is like entering skateboarding, and that's so cool, right? Like, so I think there's just trying as much as possible, even when you feel like nothing is working and stuff, you're just so stuck, you hit a wall, like trying to shift out of like, okay, maybe I was only looking at it from one possibility and maybe there's other ways to see it and try to come from a place of like, there's an abundance of opportunity out there. You just have to get creative. You know, you have to let go of what you think it's going to look like and start to be more open to like what it could look like. So
I love how skateboarding always has been conceived as these bad boys game or play. And from that, you've literally just told us like a life lesson on its own that comes from just building a group of skateboarders and a community within. So I think that's brilliant. And I think that's a very good note to wrap things up here today. Thank you so much, Kim, as always, for having the time to talk to us and share your views and experiences and inspiration to all of us. Thank you.
You're very welcome.